I need you to knock some sense into me. I'm sure you can.
Yeah, I don't know.
I enjoy listening to you. I don't always agree with everything.
All right. Enough of this persiflage.
So, you want my question?
I'm certainly not going to get myself in trouble by telling you what to do.
That makes great sense. Gosh, that's good.
Did I overwhelm you with words and wisdom?
I've got 7 kids. I feel like I could call you every day.
Wait, you're telling me I'm wrong?
Yes, I am, Dr. Ray.
You just need to tune in to Dr. Ray, honey. He's got all the answers.
Am I right or am I right?
Probably.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Thank you for joining me here on The Doctor Is In. This is the variant. I always use variant ever since COVID. Used to say version, but no variant now. Variant Look Back Friday. This is where we take previous calls, and they can go back a ways. And Andrew Krucek edits them appropriately, sends them on to me. We have them on the roster here in front of me. And we decide which ones we're going to take in what order, and then I get to speak more about them. You can always speak more. Every call, you can speak a lot more. This show is not therapy. If it were, we could have a whole lot of time. This show is education. I can't diagnose here, and I certainly can't say anything if you're seeing a therapist, can counter anything the therapist is saying, or in fact do any kind of protracted counseling and exploration. But with the look back calls, I can add a few more. I like to think they're nuggets, but some people might think they're not. Just adding extra minutes that didn't really add much to the first minutes. I hate when my wife thinks that. So we'll get to those calls in a second. This was sent to me back in 2020, actually from my wife. Yeah. She said to me something to the effect that I don't tell her I love her enough, so I sent her an email. I sent her an email, said I did. So this was sent to me. This was from the book Mere Christianity by C.S. Lewis. It was written in 1952. Now, this is when people were very, very, very distressed, frightened, I dare say panicky. The whole COVID thing had all the earmarks of a global phobia. I mean, people were just... The marks of a phobia are this. Extreme fear, that's one. Fear that in most cases is beyond the risk. All right, we did this with kids. They virtually had no risk whatsoever. And healthy people, for the most part, had no risk at all either. The risk populations were elderly and those with other serious conditions. Nevertheless, everybody lived in fear, or high percentage of the people lived in fear. And then third, avoidance. The most self-defeating response to some kind of phobic stimulus, a trigger, is avoidance or escape. You leave it, you feel relieved, but you just strengthen it. Avoidance was... What was they called? Sheltering in place, stopping religious services, all activities. I mean, it was a massive societal shutdown, which is the extreme of avoidance. Well, this was sent to me, a parallel here with C.S. Lewis writing in 1952, pretty much at the peak of the atomic scare. In one way, we think a great deal too much of the atomic bomb. How are we to live in an atomic age? Now, Lewis is alluding to the fact that never before in human history did we have at our hands the ability, and we have it much more so now, much more powerful weapons, to completely destroy functioning as we know it. Oh yeah, we may be reduced to scavengering for existence, those of us who are left. But for the most part, an all-out nuclear war would just, humanity as we know it would cease to exist. Lewis says, I am tempted to reply. Why? As you would have lived in the 16th century when the plague visited London almost every year. He's alluding to the bubonic plague that they estimate killed one third of Europe. Can you imagine one third of everybody you know dying? I can't fathom it. And yet they lived through that. And they knew that if someone they loved or themselves got sick, there was a pretty good chance, high lethality, that they could die. Or as you would have lived in a Viking age, when raiders from Scandinavia might land and kill you any night. Or as you are already living in an age of cancer. Back in 1952, cancer was a death sentence. It's not, fortunately, anymore. We can push it back, and we can, in many cases, cure it. But in 52, it was pretty much a death sentence. You got cancer, you're in big trouble. An age of paralysis, an age of air raids, an age of railway accidents, or an age of motor accidents. In other words, do not let us begin by exaggerating the novelty of our situation. In other words, never been like this before. This is the most dangerous time to ever live in human existence. No, if you know anything about history, it's not. Believe me, dear sir or madam, you and all whom you love were already sentenced to death before the atomic bomb was invented. And quite a high percentage of us were going to die in unpleasant ways. We had indeed one very great advantage over our ancestors. Anesthetics. Yeah, really. Before anesthetics, anything that you had to do to operate on your body, you just had to take it. He says, and he's pretty rough on this, it is perfectly ridiculous to go about whimpering and drawing long faces because the scientists have added one more chance of painful and premature death in a world which already bristled with such chances, and in which death itself was not a chance at all, but a certainty. Now, he was alluding to the atomic age, the atomic scare. We're still in the atomic age, but at that time, I remember even in middle school, our atomic drills getting under desks, which is quite risible. He goes on. This is the first point to be made, and the first action, to pull ourselves together. If we are all going to be destroyed by something, let that something come. Let that something be when it comes finding us doing sensible and human things, praying, working, teaching, reading, listening to music, bathing the children, playing tennis, chatting with our friends, not huddled together like frightened sheep. Isn't that what happened during COVID? Dr. Ray, you're trivializing it. It's a very serious illness. Yes, it was. I had a dear friend die of it. But at the same time, the reaction to it was one of just raw, raw fear, which infected so much of the way we functioned, so very much. We stopped religious services. All these things may break our bodies, but they need not dominate our minds. C.S. Lewis. Yeah, I wonder how many things that could apply to in our lives, huh? When we come back, your calls, Dr. Ray.
A call on the Danger Alert Channel.
What do you want?
You're listening to the doctor. Come in, pull up a couch. Let's talk right now.
If you're still on the fence about purchasing a new air conditioner, just know that prices are expected to increase by 25% over the next year due to EPA standards. Don't wait.
Hi, I'm Ron Garmo with Running Right Heating and Cooling. Call us today for a free quote on a new air conditioning system and all your heating and cooling needs. Mention Ave Maria Radio and get a 10% discount.
Call today, 248-884-1704, or go to runningrighthvac.com to schedule an appointment.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
Are you paying high prices with a traditional health insurance company that pays for things that violate your conscience?
there's an alternative available. Solidarity HealthShare is a community of faithful individuals and families that never share into immoral medical services, all while saving you money with prices starting as low as $85 per month for singles and $512 for families. Never fund another abortion with your healthcare dollars. Call 844-313-4999 to learn more.
This week on Christ is the Answer, we continue Father John's series on the seven sacraments. What is a sacrament? Well, it's a concrete mystery that when you bump into it, it puts you in contact with divine reality. Whether you're going through RCIA right now or just want to refresh your knowledge on these beautiful gifts, join us this week as Father John talks about the sacredness of marriage and the source and summit of our lives, the Eucharist. Tune in for Christ is the Answer, Monday through Fridays at 11 a.m. on Ave Maria Radio.
You like pizza? Me too. And for that, we can thank our friend Tom Monahan. First, he starts with $900 and opens one pizza shop. Then it's worldwide, thousands of shops. But all this was just a warm-up for his greatest achievement yet. He built a university.
God inspired Tom to build up generations of men and women who have a hunger to reach the world for Christ. This place is Ave Maria University.
Visit avemaria.edu to see what's next.
Looking for these medicine bottles that have on it, warning, may remove wrinkles and increase energy. I've been looking for one of those. Maybe it's one of those generic ones. Okay, let's see if we can remove some emotional wrinkles and increase some psychological energy. Let me see which one of those I want to go to. Let's go to Elizabeth from Minnesota. Standard question that a lot of people struggle with nowadays, especially when they feel that they have, parents who are manipulative. I don't want to say manipulative. That's a gross trait accusation. At times, behaving manipulatively, or are difficult to deal with consistently well.
It has reared its ugly head in my family again. This time,
oh, the difficult person that we're talking about.
The difficult person. It's my mother. Sad to say, my brother and I have been hearing from her for decades about honoring her, and especially when one of us falls short, and. We're both in our 60s. Our mother is 80, almost 84. What is required of us?
Well, it's interesting you said your mother thinks you're not honoring her when you fall short. What does she mean by that? What does that mean?
Not doing what she wants.
Oh. You think that's honoring somebody, doing what they want you to do?
I think that's her understanding of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's not yours, is it?
I don't want to be that way. So no, I hope not. Because I have grown children too. And I don't want to be that person.
Elizabeth, it says here you're in your 60s. You said your mom's in 84.
Yeah.
So I'm going to assume this has been going on a long time. That's safe?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So, at this point, why have you not long since said, my mother thinks that to honor her, we have to absolutely do everything she thinks we should do, and if we don't, she accuses us of not honoring her. Boy, is that ridiculous. Why have you never come to that conclusion?
I don't know. I've taken my difficulties, because trust me, she's leveled it against me so many times. All it does in me is, and it's happening to me again, hearing that she's leveled this accusation against my brother. All it does in me is raise up the feelings of inadequacy and unforgiveness.
Wow.
Yeah. I heap it on.
Where's your thinking in this, Elizabeth? Why are you not able to think that I love my mother, I will give her the honor that is due to her, I will give her respect, I will not be nasty to her?
Yeah, but I haven't done any of those things.
Okay, then you have honored her, and there is no way that I'm going to do everything she wants me to do simply because she emotionally bullies me. She makes me feel like I'm a bad daughter. How come you can't do that?
I don't know. That's a good question. I really don't know.
Self-doubt. What if you're wrong, huh? What if, in fact, when she makes a request of you or wants you to do something a certain way, you're not doing it, and she's perfectly reasonable, and you're just being a bratty little kid?
Yeah.
Oh, Elizabeth, I was hoping that wasn't it.
Yeah, no, that's it, exactly.
So what could I say that would free you of this idea that when my mom is dissatisfied for me, I have to automatically feel I'm not honoring her?
Well, that's why I'm calling. I'd like to know what is required of me so that when I hear that from her, when I hear that from her, that I can say, Mom, this is what honoring means. This is what the scripture means. And I don't know that she would hear that from me because...
That's a wonderful thing to say, Elizabeth, but I'm going to change one word in it, okay?
Okay.
You
okay.
said, I'm going to say, Mom, this is what honoring means. This is what the scripture means. I'm going to change Mom to Elizabeth. Elizabeth, this is what honoring means. Elizabeth, this is what the scripture says. To honor your parents. In other words, you're going to tell yourself this. You're going to convince yourself. You're not going to convince your mom. Are you kidding me? She's 84 years old.
Yeah.
You actually think there's something you're going to say to her where she's going to go, whoa, I never looked at it that way.
Oh, good point. Yeah.
Not a chance.
Which is why I just roll over and play dead.
Yeah, not a chance.
Yeah.
Here's something you got to do. You got to keep reinforcing to yourself. Reasonably, logically, fair-mindedly, morally, in obedience to the commandment, you love your mom, you give her respect, not nasty to her, but that has no connection to I have to do everything she thinks I have to do. None. Zero. Zip. Nada. You don't need me to tell you that, Elizabeth. I wish you'd have told yourself that 40 years ago. But see, you got to believe it, dear. You can't believe it just because I said it. You got to believe it because that's reality. Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. When I look back on these calls, I sometimes wonder, why did I choose that call for future comments? And I think it was when Elizabeth said the first two or three sentences of her call. She said, this has been going on for decades. I'm in my 60s, and my mother is in her 80s. So the question becomes, when do you decide that a person is going to lose credibility with their accusations? The accusation that just totally emotionally bullies Elizabeth is you're not being a good daughter. You're deficient. Because you're not honoring me as you should. And unspoken is, and you call yourself a Christian. Now, how many decades will it take for someone to say, she's been doing that to me for as long as I can remember. Why am I still giving it power? When will I decide this is going to stop emotionally pushing me around? When am I going to decide that? When somebody engages on a certain pattern of behavior that I hesitate to say this, that hurts, because we have to decide how much it hurts, or that is mean or manipulative or critical, offensive, whatever, how long does the pattern have to go on for us before we finally get to a point where we say, this is what they do? And therefore, with each successive time that they do it, it loses impact. It loses credibility. Now, I think somewhere down deep, Elizabeth knows that her mom's accusations are unfair. Because if I were to ask her in depth, Elizabeth, are you a good daughter? Yes, I've always loved her, I've always taken care of her, I've always been respectful. So she would acknowledge that. But she doesn't believe it. Why? Because her mother tells her otherwise. When will Elizabeth get to the point where she says, you know, I'm pretty confident in the fact that I've done what I can to treat my mother well, and my mother, for her own personality reasons, or her own history, or her own temperamental wiring, doesn't agree. Well, nothing's going to change. The one thing I can do is to quit upsetting myself about it as much. She was hoping that if she said that to her mom, Mom, this is what honoring means, a light was going to go off. And Mom was going to say, oh gosh, for the last 60 years, you've been honoring me and I haven't recognized it. I'm so sorry. We can't accept when other people who are, quote unquote, as Elizabeth said, difficult for us, don't acknowledge they're difficult. They don't acknowledge what they're doing that makes them difficult. Elizabeth's mother's not going to acknowledge that in any way, at all. Elizabeth has to bring her own peace, even if it comes at age 60, which I was hoping it would have come somewhere in her 20s. But it didn't. At some point, most of us have to decide that our understanding of what is going on is legit. Yes, we can be blind, of course. We can be self-absorbed and our self-interest rules. Yes, that happens all the time. But at some point, when you're dealing with somebody who is chronically upsetting for you, but they just happen to be a very close relative or a close friend or a close contact, i.e. a boss at work, at some point, you got to start shifting your thinking and saying, this is what is happening and is probably going to continue to happen. I can't stop it. But I do know that I don't have to let it have all the power that I've been giving it. That's the difference. Dr. Ray, you can't flip a switch and all of a sudden have all these feelings go away. No, you can't flip a switch. But you certainly can change directions. Because Elizabeth has been going in the same direction for the last 60 years. Well, okay, she's in her 60s. Who knows when this all started? Maybe as a teenager. I don't know. Let's say the last 45 years. Her mother accuses automatically. She feels deficient. Her mother says, you're not giving me my due. Automatically, she thinks, okay, what is your due? I'll try to give you your due. Mother defines the due. Mother says, this is honor, that you listen to what I say and you do it. That's not honor. That's not honor at all. I don't know exactly I shouldn't probably go there because I don't understand, but when honor thy father and mother was written, I would certainly assume it was not meant to say do whatever they tell you at all times when you're an adult. I can't see that. Because our Lord oftentimes tells us don't do these things, but what if, in fact, your parents told you to do those things? Well, you weren't dishonoring them if you didn't do them. So, I hope Elizabeth finds peace here in her last years. And after Mom passes away, if Elizabeth is still here on this earth, I would hope that her guilt doesn't follow her even after Mom's gone in this reverberating kind of relationship. another quote from C.S. Lewis's Mere Christianity. This one is definitely hard-hitting. It costs God nothing, so far as we know, to create good things. But to convert rebellious wills cost him crucifixion. It costs God nothing, so far as we know, to create good things. But to convert, one might say create, I guess, no, recreate, rebellious wills cost him crucifixion. Whew! Infinite cost. This is Look Back Friday. I'm Dr. Ray Guarendi. This program is a co-production of the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network and Ave Maria Radio Communications with my producer man right now and editor of these calls, Andrew Krucek, does a marvelous job in editing these calls. Although he takes me out a lot, and I thought, boy, I would have left that in because I thought that was kind of smart. And he said, no, it really wasn't. I poll tested it, Ray, and 74% of the people said, drop it. And one of those was your wife. Get her off the poll. She's like the Russian judge, you know. Everybody else gets a 9.8, and the Russian judge gives them a 6.1. Anonymous caller from Washington asking about defending the faith on social media. Yes, sir. How much time do you get on there, and what kinds of things do you have to defend?
Well, I think you summarized kind of what social media is and how it works, and it does seem to me that that's where the culture war is taking place. If I take myself out of it, it doesn't mean that I'm immune from it. I'm going to see it somewhere else. Someone else will show it to me. If you leave me on it a little bit too long, I'm going to get good at it. And if you've got something negative to say about my faith, well, I could probably come up with something negative to say about your way of life just the same. So, you know, on one hand, I feel like, you know, is this kind of where God's calling his people to make sure we're not being misrepresented or just not there at all? Or are we called to be, for those of us who are in the world, are we called to kind of be on there and give our two cents the way we're wired to give our two cents? And I can go either way with it. I can find other things in my life to do, but there's something a little bit different about these times and these tools that they are using, I guess maybe to manipulate mankind. I don't know. But I'm on it, and sometimes I can have a pretty sharp tongue and, you know, just looking for maybe some guidance, a little bit of advice about how to go about waging this fight we're in, so to speak.
The advantage you have is that 30 years ago, about the only people you could talk to were in your personal circle.
True.
Social media allows you to talk the faith to a much larger group. So that's the benefit. The post that my son put up today is already hitting many thousands. I don't know what my audience is on this radio show. It's probably like 120 people. I don't know, somewhere around there. But, again, I couldn't make that point about the faith without that Instagram. Now, the key here is that when you say defending the faith, maybe what you would better do is to explain the faith. When somebody attacks it, says something nonsensical, you can say, well, here is what the Catholic Church teaches and what we believe, and here is why. So you're not going after them and saying, yeah, well, here's a scripture verse you ignore. What about this one, huh, buddy boy? You get into that and forget it. But here's where you have, I think, your main effect. You may not change the mind of those hostile posters, but there are other people who look at this and say, well, I didn't know the church teaches that. Well, I didn't know that's why they believe that. I didn't know that everybody in the early centuries of the church actually believed the bread and wine become the body and blood of Christ. I didn't know that. Is that right? You're the first time they will have heard this. my son pointed out to me that many of the people who tap into my Instagram are not followers. At one point, we had like 80% of the people who don't follow me. These are just people that it showed up on their feed. Well, that's great. That's what I want to do, because maybe some small percentage of those people are going to go, I never thought of that. I didn't know. That's not what somebody told me the Catholic Church was. Well, that makes sense. That's what you want to do. And in that sense, if you can do it, do it. But don't get hostile. Don't fling something back at them. You'll win the argument, but you'll lose. That's what I would suggest if you think you can do it. You got to be careful, though. You want to spend 6 hours on there and have everything else fall to the side. But this is a good venue for you to say, let me explain the faith and let me explain why. And there's going to be a lot of people that are going to listen to that didn't challenge you like the guy did that prompted your response.
I like that. I can do that. So, that's doable.
That's doable. And it's quite a venue to be able to say, okay, let us talk to the faith. Because most people who even go to church, their only explanation of the faith is a six-minute homily. So many years ago, I had a young lady friend, not a date. I was obviously an adult. She was a young lady that we had known through babysitting, and she was engaged. And her husband was not Catholic. And her parents were very upset that she was looking at the Catholic faith. So they got a guy from their church, who was supposedly their scripture guru, to come to the house and deprogram her. And she said, well, I want Ray and Randy there too. And her fiancé just sat there. He didn't have a heavy hand in the game yet. So the gentleman was offering all the reasons why the Catholic Church was wrong and she was being manipulated, etc. My wife and I just simply explained to church what we taught and why. Of course, we didn't budge him. And we didn't budge her parents. But her fiancé told her on the way home, Ray and Randy made the most sense of what they were saying. So he's now very, very Catholic. So, yes, you're speaking to an audience that is not directly the person you're talking to. I noticed that here on this radio show. You keep in mind that 99%, more than that, don't call in. But they're listening. And what you say may ring with them. You're speaking to that broader group when you do something like this. My son puts out things on my Instagram that are 30 to 45 seconds, and some of them go straight at the faith and the logic of the faith or the illogic of doing something different from the faith. And yeah, there are some very, very hostile responses. Nasty, mean. But many people answer those mean responses for me. I don't have to say a word. Because they hear it, and they're not as openly resistant to it. Big screen radio, high definition radio, pulchritudinous, mellifluous, excoriate, pugnacious, psychopharmacological. That's about as big definition as you're going to get. I do. I get frustrated with people who use words that they don't know the meaning of, you know, and they're all photosynthesis about it. Yeah, I try to correct them, but this is Look Back Friday. We're taking calls from previous programs. See what we got. Well, dear sweet Lydia, she is an older mom. I believe Andrew said she's in her 70s. And she is still grieving the loss of her son.
I just have to talk to you about the grieving process. Because I know that my son's in heaven and everything. And my family's in heaven. Because, you know, not only did I lose my son, I lost my two brothers, my mom, my dad, my daughter, my other son, you know, Angela and Corey. I lost three kids. It's kind of hard, and I've been living this pain since I was 6 years old because my father was murdered when I was 6 years old.
Oh, my.
So
oh
I have my. Been living this pain all my life. But so when my rest of my family members have died, it's like, you know, I have faith in God. I believe in God. I know they're in heaven. But it's just that I miss them. And I was wondering, because how do you keep on going when you miss them so much? And my heart, and I'm even going to a cardiologist now, Ray, because I feel like my heart is literally broken. And they're going to have me tested this month, next month, to see, because I might have a heart, broken heart syndrome.
Lydia, how old are you, if I may ask, how old are you?
Well, you saw me. I'm 74.
So if you live long enough, many of your loved ones you're going to watch pass away, correct?
Yes, I know.
There's no way around that. What you're saying is that in some respects, this isn't the norm. You shouldn't have so many people that you love pass away, correct?
Right.
But if you live, but they do. If you live long enough, I've talked to people in their 90s, and they will tell me that pretty much everybody in their lives, except maybe one or two of their children, have passed away. I think one of the things you're struggling with is that you said, I know he's in heaven, or I believe he's in heaven, but I'm still grieving. So that raises the question, why am I not getting more comfort out of my belief? Is that true?
It just feels like it's been piled up, so many of them, that I just finally letting go, that like the dam is broken, you know?
It's okay to cry a lot. And it's okay to grieve, because there's nothing wrong with feeling bad. The question becomes, well, two things, really. Have you shut down in life? In other words, because I'm grieving, I'm just laying in bed.
No, doctor, I have a job. I work, and I even babysit the little kids.
Okay, so you haven't done that.
Because, no, I know what depression is. I know. Okay. I'm not that close to depression, right? Because I keep myself busy, and I pray to God every day to help me, give me strength.
So what you're saying is, there's something wrong with my sadness. Not necessarily. Your son, and no matter how old a child is when they die, if they die before the parent, there's always that element of, this is not the way it should be. Children should not pass away before their parents. So I can see that being a real blow. It's in May, which wasn't that long ago. So for you to still feel a lot of hurt over that is perfectly normal. I always tell folks, when somebody close to you dies, at the least the first year, there really are no rules. You're going to cry at a moment's notice. You're going to feel guilty when you laugh. You're going to go through all the holidays and the birthdays and everything else for the first time without that person there. All of that weighs on you. Lydia, tell God. Oh, don't tell God. Ask God. Help me to understand. Help me to have comfort in my grief. I'm missing this person real bad. And it's causing me to look back on my life and tally up all the other people who have passed away. As we said, honey, you live long enough, that list is going to get very, very long. I got a whole bunch of people in my life that are already gone.
Yeah. And you know what I do, Father, Dr. Ray, I even said, well, my son leaves in heaven, and he's going to have the first time celebration with having a big birthday party for Jesus in heaven.
There you go, sweetheart.
And he's having a good time.
It's a good thought, and just keep that thought. Because it's easy to miss him very badly, but at the same time, if you can at least counter some of it by saying, I'm very happy for him. Some things people confuse about grief. They think grief is depression. No, no, no. The two are very different. Grief can become so overwhelming that it can constrict and interfere with living life. And in the very early stages of grief, it can do that, but generally it lifts. Doesn't mean it ever goes away, but it lifts. So one of the things I wanted to ask Lydia was, is there depression here? And she said, no, I'm going to work and I'm watching kids. So she's still living the basics of life. Underneath what she was asking, and obviously I didn't get a chance to ask this, do you think there's something wrong with you because it hurts like this? Now, I kind of toyed with it when I said, do you think you should have more comfort if you believe he's in heaven, and why aren't you getting more comfort? And as I said that, I thought of the shortest verse in the Bible. A confusing verse, really. And I went to Jimmy Akin's podcast because he talked about this. Jesus wept. Do you recall the context? He was at the tomb of Lazarus, his very dear friend. Lazarus has been dead for 4 days. This is in the Gospel of John. Jesus knew what he was going to do. He was going to raise Lazarus from the dead. And they made a point of saying 4 days, because they wanted everybody to understand it. At that time, too, they thought the spirit kind of hung around the body for a while, you know, so they wanted to make sure, no, the spirit's long gone. It's been 4 days. Why would Jesus cry? If he knew Lazarus was going to live again, at least on this earth. Because obviously there was something about Lazarus passing away that affected Jesus emotionally, even though it was temporary. There was a woman named Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. She was a psychiatrist a while back. And she said in her work with people who are dying that there was a series of stages. Denial, rage, bargaining, depression, acceptance. She said people go through those stages. Well, first of all, they don't. Research has kind of shown that everybody goes through different phases, stages. They mix them up. Some of them don't experience denial. Some of them don't even experience acceptance. So that was a nice little theory. But I think it lingers in some people's mind when they're grieving. Okay, I got to go through the stages of grief. You know, the denial, then the anger at God, maybe. Then the bargaining, okay, why can't it be this way? I'm hoping that my friend's in heaven, my wife's in heaven. And then depression, really spilling over into affecting life. And then finally acceptance. Perhaps those are phases, any one of which somebody can linger in, or any one of which can go in a different order. But this happens. Grief is by far the most powerful of emotions. It is a sledgehammer unlike anything that most people have ever experienced, especially the first time it hits them. Especially someone very, very close. A child. Oh, beyond words. And so it's very easy to think that this intensity of feeling is possibly pathological. I'm fraying emotionally. Not praying, fraying. But in fact, grief can be pretty potent. And if you recognize that, it takes some of the sting out of it. Because at least you've eliminated that question that says, is something wrong with me? Should I be doing better? C.S. Lewis wrote a book, A Grief Observed. It was when his wife, he was a confirmed bachelor, but he met a woman. He was married to her for 4 years, and she died. And he talked about it, and her grief observed. With his typical insight on what grief is like. I remember he compared it to an empty stomach, a completely empty, aching stomach. No food. Interesting analogy. Kind of a hollowness, if you will. So this dear sweet lady at age 74 watched three children die. Wow. Her dad died when she was a little girl. Wow. She didn't mention her spouse. I had no way of knowing whether he was still alive or not. It sounded like not. It sounded like she was pretty much alone in that sense. But the nice thing about her, some people would understand that she would be angry at God, and she wasn't. She wasn't. So bless her heart. Sometimes maybe she just called because she wanted to be able to say what she was going through. Maybe for her, temporarily, that's a bit of comfort. I'm Dr. Ray.
Don't touch that dial. Dr. Ray will be back.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
I would always hear from different people at non-Catholic churches that Catholics were going to hell or that they really didn't know who the Lord was. The Catholic Church is not all what people say it is. I mean, it's completely different. There's so many stereotypes. It's very possible to know the Lord, and it's very possible to have a relationship with God in the Catholic Church. I believe I was born into the Catholic Church, and that's where I belong.
If you've been away from the Catholic Church, visit CatholicsComeHome.org.
Colleen Kelly Mast has Mast Appeal.
Do you need some tips on getting along with your family members? Are you trying to figure out the right thing to do when everyone else is going in different directions? Are you struggling with a personal problem and need help with the next step to take? Join me live each week and call in with your questions or personal problems. Listen to Mast Appeal each Saturday morning, and maybe you can prevent some problems too.
Mast Appeal, Saturday mornings from 9 to 11 on this Ave Maria radio station.
Light of the East, weekends on Ave Maria Radio.
I am Father Thomas Loya. This week on Ave Maria, the story of the pontificate of Pope Francis will likely unfold for some time. We will look at the legacy of Pope Francis in respect to the Eastern Catholic Churches.
Now on Ave Maria Radio's newest FM stations, 105.5 FM in Southfield and 107.9 FM in Ann Arbor.
Well, if I let that music play another 20 seconds, it's going to take me to within about 2 minutes of the end of the show. So there's no way I'm going to get to the rest of any of the calls or even part of it. We talk a little bit about our anonymous mail's call from Defending the Faith on social media. I had to be dragged kicking and screaming to social media. I wanted no part of it because I had this image of it as, hey, look at me, I'm eating a bologna sandwich. And this morning I had a bagel. I tell you, I showed you, my bagel is in the shape of my 1972 Cutlass that I had. I didn't want any part of that. But I was convinced by people I respect that this is one way to reach. Obviously, there's gazillions of Instagram people out there and podcasts and everything. Overwhelming. Like I threw the numbers a billion or something. But one way to trickle in and reach a few, I sent out a interesting thing you might want to check into on Instagram. I called it, if you're not Catholic, there's a logic problem you have with the Bible. You may not realize it, but it is, and I don't know a way around it. You have to accept certain things that I don't know if you'd be willing to accept. Well, that thing took off. I don't know if it took off in the Catholic world, but typically what people do with these things is they repost them. They send them to somebody else. It's kind of like a multiplicative effect, or maybe even geometric. That's how things go viral. Everything starts sharing. And I never would have guessed that would have done that. You can't predict. I've said some things on social media that I thought, okay, I think that's really going to hit a lot of people. and they're going to possibly share it with somebody, and it didn't. It didn't at all. Ah, I mean, a couple 3,000 views or something like that, but nothing big, like the joke I told that hit millions. So you can't predict, but at the same time, to have the ability to reach beyond my audience here on the radio or the TV show, to go to people who would not even know anything about Catholic, anything about Christian, anything about, in many respects, parenting. Young people not married yet. Because much of what I post is for a general audience. It isn't something that is particularly faith-based in the language that it uses or the references that are cited. No, let's live life better, and here's some possible thoughts to throw in the hopper and see what you think. So, as long as I keep it that way, every once in a while I am told people want to know something personal, like show me holding the grandkid or something like that. But I'm glad I'm there. Thank you for joining me. Thanks, Andrew Krucek, for all you do at that end in Ann Arbor. And I thank you people for the company. Walk with God to infinity.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit drray.com and follow him on Facebook and Instagram. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio, and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.